It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm PGA Hansen, your host. Well, this weekend's show is focused on the recent Tuolumne County grand jury report, specifically the final two, which focused heavily on District 1 Supervisor Mike Holland. The grand jury put out five different reports this year. The first was about correctional facilities. The second was about responses by county leaders to last year's report. The third about payroll practices of the Twain Hart Fire District. The fourth report was entitled Governance Practices Impacting Public Trust. And then the fifth was called Behind the Devastation and was focused on the Tuolumne County Community Development Department. So the final two, as mentioned, focused a lot on District 1 Supervisor Holland and how the grand jury works as they spend a year doing investigations. They write up a report listing findings and recommendations, release the report, and then the government entities have a certain period to respond. So once the grand jury puts out its report, it's kind of the end of it from their standpoint, as members don't answer questions or hold a briefing with the media, that type of thing. It's kind of, here is the report. So Mike Holland was mentioned quite a bit in the last two reports, so I invited him in today to have a chance to respond and share his side of the story on these various different things, which he's going to do today. So, Supervisor Holland, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, BJ. Thanks for having me here today.
So those final two reports, as mentioned, the second to last one was called Governance Practices Impacting Public Trust. And one of the things that it mentioned was at one point it said that a couple of jurors were removed from the investigation, indicating that you had requested them to be removed. So can you elaborate on that situation?
Yeah, thanks, BJ. I definitely will. So a couple things I want to mention as we get started here. So I know the newspaper, the Union Democrat, wrote an article. Alex, the editor, reached out to me. He reached out to me on a Monday night around 6:30 and asked if I could get all the responses to him by Wednesday, which was 36 hours later. And I told him I can try. And the next day I emailed him and said, hey, can we wait till the following week? Just kind of like when I talked to you about, can we wait a week to do this? Because I have not read the reports. I need time to read them, go through them, and give them some good answers. And so Alex didn't seem to like that. He said he had a self-imposed mandate and just wanted to get his story out. And so, but I did offer to sit down with him for as long as it took, and he said he could not wait. And so we were doing budget the next day at the county, and I thought that was the more important thing because that's what I'm there to do. So anyways, just to get that out there, so, you know, that was an open door to him. He just chose not to take it. So the two jury things. So kind of what happened was my first interview with the grand jury was around March, towards the end of it. They said it was like March 27th in the report. And so when I went there, I recognized a couple of the jury members that were on there and some things they were saying on social media. One of them had blatantly had said that I somehow interfered in the recall efforts of Cody Ritz, one of the school board members, because me and him are friends. And so, which is completely false and untrue. She just failed to get any signatures for the recall and her measure failed. But instead of admitting that, she decided to go around and tell people somehow I had a hand in that, which is completely untrue. I had nothing to do with that at all. The other member that I brought up is on social media, which I've seen the clips that said, the white men have stolen all of our land. And I thought, well, that ain't very, you know, not very appropriate to be on the grand jury. I'm a developer, a contractor. That would definitely apply to me. And so these are two issues I brought up to the foreperson, I guess the assistant, and said, hey, I have concerns about these two people. And they didn't look shocked when I told them that. Like, they already seemed to know these things and said, okay. And I said, I don't see how they could be an impartial juror knowing what they're saying in there. And they said, okay, we agree with you, and asked them to leave and asked their two members leave. I'm not the one that asked them to leave. I know they're trying to word it like I did. And then they go back and talk about how they did a self-investigation and said there's not a problem. So I'm not sure how the grand jury says they can investigate themselves. Maybe the next grand jury will look into the current grand jury. I don't know, or the last grand jury. But yeah, so that's actually what went down there. And so that is why I asked the two leave. And I sat and talked with them that night for over 4 hours. In fact, I came back a second time and spent another over 4 hours. So that's over 8 hours of me spending time with the grand jury. And if you look in their report, they said they spent a total of around 70 hours interviewing people. That means 12% of their time was just with me alone. So I don't see how they could say I hindered it or I wasn't open. In fact, if anything, I'm probably too open. And if you know me, I just say whatever comes out of my mouth and whatever I'm thinking, and I'm very just straightforward about it. And so, you know, and that's how I was with them. And that's how it kind of all went down. So I know they're trying to spin it differently in here, but that's not what actually happened.
get into some of the other items with the report. One of the things that came up in the second to last report was in relation to a mobile home ordinance that you didn't recuse yourself from having an ownership stake, it noted, in a Hill Haven. So what is your response to that?
Yeah, so here's what kind of happened. So back in, I think it was May 6 is what it says in the report, that we had a discussion about mobile home rent fee increase. And kind of what it says out of there, and these are my words, so I'm going to read you exactly what it says out of the report, that Supervisor Holland, this is what I said. Yes, I just don't think we should raise the fees on some of the most fiscally challenging people we have in our communities that live in mobile home parks. 50% of that fee gets passed on to them. And to pay for an ordinance that the Board of Supervisors created and wanted to defend. I don't agree with the mobile home park ordinance in general, but I don't think we should pass on the fee to the people that are most fiscally challenged in our community. And it went on, and then Supervisor Campbell brought up, well, you know, that if people in the mobile home park are benefiting from a fee increase, then they should pay for the fee increase, and it's not that much money. And then I replied to him that, Campbell, my point wasn't that one way more or less, like if we charge them or don't charge them, it's the fact that we're asking people to pay for something the county's implementing, and that I don't think we should do that. And so kind of what happened with all this and why we had to redo this vote was during that discussion, the back and forth, the CDD director gets up there and she made a comment that that amount of money would have to be absorbed by her department, and that $6,000 represents the amount of their training budget for the year. So what she's saying is, we don't get that money and we have to take it out of our department, that could wipe out our training budget. Well, if you remember, I think it was on this show sometime past, BJ, I brought up the fact when our staff was gone on these training with the budgets, they were going to Hooters in Southern California. So that's where the taxpayer money was going. And again, this all started because Quincy went and was complaining to Carol Dow, the lady that walks around town that wears the mask, and that Carol wrote an FPPC complaint. And basically said, well, because Quincy knew I owned a mobile home park, and said, well, he owns a mobile home park, he shouldn't be involved in that. Well, at that time, I did not know that Carol wrote an FPPC complaint. I found that out later. But Quincy went to Sarah Creel, the county council, and said, hey, Mike owns a mobile home park, he shouldn't be involved. Sarah came to me and said, hey, I don't know if you can or can't be. Why don't we just redo the vote? I said, that's fine. Redo it. I'll stay out of it. And that's what happened. And we revoted, and the vote stayed exactly the same. Nothing changed. The fees were not increased. And so you always got to look at the bigger context. It wasn't that they were worried about, and I want to say they, that the building department wasn't so much worried about getting more money out of the mobile home park to really defend it, was they just wanted to defend their budget. That was really what it was they were afraid that more money would be cut out of their budget. And again, that's the supervisor's responsibility, is to manage the budget. And again, I've always taken that stance. If the county's putting in rules, that we should pay for the rules, that we shouldn't put them on the people that are most fiscally challenged in our community. And then you go back, you can watch the meetings, and it says all that in there. So that's kind of what happened with that, and the vote got retaken. Subsequently, I found about the FPPC complaint, and they called me. I told them what happened, and they said, okay, and never heard another word from them again. I told them we retook the vote out of abundance of a caution just to make sure, and that was the end of it.
So given your side of the story, you know, what was your reaction then when the grand jury report came out and laid out all the different various concerns?
I mean, I told them the exact same thing, but that's not what they put in here, was they left a lot of that out. So of the minutiae about how that really went on and what happened. And when it got suggested that maybe I shouldn't be part of the vote, I had no problem stepping out from it. And it didn't change the vote. Nothing changed in the outcome. It still stayed the same. So what they're complaining about was I somehow influenced that. And again, the amount of cost it would have been to me, that's what they're saying. They're trying to say that it was a personal benefit to me. We have 4 mobile home parks here in the county. That would have been a total cost of $28 to me. I've never passed it on to my tenants. I just pay it. So the increase of $28, they think I did all this for $28. I mean, I hate to break their heart, but my kids spend more than that at Starbucks at one trip, you know? So it was never about the money. And part of that rule the FPC talks about is you can be a part of a discussion if it's an insignificant impact. And I own 4 out of the 980 mobile homes that are impacted by this rule. That's a fraction of 1%. I consider that insignificant. So, either way, we retook the vote and it was over with at that point in time anyways, and it stayed exactly the same. So, but they tried to spin it as somehow I was all in it for $28. So
we need to take a quick break. We're talking to Supervisor Mike Holland on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We are talking about the Tuolumne County Grand Jury reports, the recent ones that were released on this weekend's Motherlode Views. The last two specifically were critical of District 1 Supervisor Mike Holland and some of the decisions that were made in county government. Supervisor Holland is joining us in studio today. Supervisor Holland, next thing I want to ask you about is a lot of the final two reports focused on a project, a storage project that you were working on as a private contractor, and it had some public land that was involved. There was also a fire hydrant. So tell us about that situation and your side of the story.
Okay, so kind of what happened, BJ, was we started this project back in, I think it was like 2019 or 2020, long before I was ever a supervisor. And so when we submitted for the project, you know, there is some rules in the county that says you got to have a fire hydrant within 300 feet of your buildings and whatnot, which is common, you know, throughout the county. And so, and typically most of those fire hydrants are connected to the TUD water line. High School Road is this weird exception because the county actually owns High School Road because it was part of that mine purchase back when they acquired Sonora Mining. So what happened was TUD had brought the water line down High School Road about halfway, and then it switched over to Sonora Mining lines, which were just the same size lines, and they ran back to the mine. That, and there's a bunch of hydrants already connected to this line further back in the mine back when they used to do all that mining and stuff back there. And so And I had heard they were kept having problems when they would open up the hydrants back that the water would come out brown and kind of nasty, and they really wasn't sure why. So I had proposed for years with different staff members throughout the county and said, hey, look, why should I tap into TUD, dig right along the existing main that's already there to put in a dead-end hydrant? Won't you guys let me tap into the main that the county owns, and if the main has a problem or it's crushed or broken, I'll dig back and replace it as far as it needs to go back to the connection, which at the most would be about 300 feet, and put the hydrant in there. So if the pipe is damaged, the county gets a new pipe replacing the part of their problem, and then they get the hydrant because the hydrant's out in the public roadway. The neighbors can use it. There's two houses across the street that's available for. And so I proposed that. I went to several meetings. I was in one meeting that had 10 different people. Most of them I never even knew. They're all department heads at the county. This is long before I was a supervisor and proposed this. Well, it took a long time through the process. And so the grand jury really quizzed me about this. And I, you know, they kept saying, well, Tracy Riggs said she never gave permission. I showed them an email that said, well, this looks like permission to me. But they didn't really mention that in there very much. So anyways, that's kind of what was going on with the hydrant. And so the county agreed. We did. We came down. We found the line. There was no problem with the line. What it was is they hardly use it anymore, and it's a steel line. So it gets rust and stuff in it, and that's why it had turned brown. They just need to flush it out a little more often. And so we installed the hydrant. It's put in. And so they keep trying to say, in fact, we had people come to the board, like Marianne Schmidt came and gave this big speech about how I installed a hydrant. Now, mind you, I had permission to do this before I was even a supervisor. I just never got around to putting it in until the very end of the project. In fact, if I would have done it at the beginning of the project, it probably never ever would have came up because it would have been installed, finished, and done. I just waited to the end of the project, and so that's how it became a political thing. So you had people like Marianne give this big, long speech, come to the board and say, like, I'm bad for putting a fire hydrant in. I mean, could you imagine if Chinese Camp had a fire hydrant? It might have saved some houses down there. So they're mad about that. They're just mad for political reasons. So she gives a speech. She walks out. And I'll tell you, I've never seen our DA move faster. I thought Oprah Winfrey was in the lobby giving away free Subarus because she got up, ran after Marianne Schmidt, and then without ever talking to me, does an investigation into me. And I find out about this because it's released. Not once did she ever have a single conversation with me about this fire hydrant, or she would have found all this information out. And she released this thing and says it's not criminal and all this stuff. It's just kind of a giant farce. That's what's been going on about this. They also wrote in the report, they talked about, well, we didn't color code the fire hydrant tops. Well, even according to our own fire head person, which is Steve Gregory, they stopped doing that a long time ago. And I've installed many hydrants, and we have never painted the top of them colors. We've always just left them yellow or whatever color they came, because the county has to maintain that monitoring of them, and they don't do it. So they stopped doing that a long time ago. So that's why we never painted it. That's why it's in there. The grand jury also talks about, and this is the exact sentence from them, the civil grand jury further noted that requirements governing fire hydrants differ depending on whether the hydrant is classified as a public or private. So in their report, they are trying to say that this is a private hydrant. But again, it's out in the public road for anybody to use. And if you look at the chart that they have, like on page 40 of their report, you go to the very first thing, ownership. And it talks about typically owned by a public water agency or other public entity. Well, again, I'm pretty sure the county of Tuolumne is another public entity. So that qualifies. A private hydrant is privately owned. I don't own the hydrant. I don't own the water main. I paid for it. The second thing talks about primary purpose, provides prior protection for public water distribution systems and surrounding community. Again, the hydrant's there. A fire truck can pull up, hook up to it if the houses across the street are on fire and help put out those houses. So you talked about all – they talk about all the stuff in there, and they really try to make it seem like they became experts on fire hydrants. In fact, when I went and talked to them, they talked about, well, we found an online report that said a fire hydrant exploded and killed firemen. And I asked them, when, where, and how did this happen? They could not tell me. I'm like, well, for all I know, this happened in Pakistan or something, and it wasn't a real fire hydrant. And I went and proceeded and asked them some questions. I said, well, how much water pressure do you think is in a fire hydrant? And they proceeded to tell me that it has 500 to 600 pounds of pressure in it. Well, anyone that deals with water systems in here is going to laugh when I just said that, because our water system up here has about 50 to 60 pounds of pressure in it, not 500 to 600. In fact, fire hydrants are designed, when you hit them with a car, they snap off, fall on the ground, and the water shoots straight in the air like you see in all the movies. They're designed to break off because they do get hit and they get broken. And then you reattach the bolts and you put them back together. So that's essentially kind of what happened with the fire hydrant. They talk about, you know, in the report, like, well, they can't see the fire hydrant because the weeds are growing around it now. Well, that's correct. It's the county's property, and the county is not maintaining their own property by weed eating it. So I'm not sure what we're supposed to do about that as a private contractor. Am I supposed to go on to county property and then weed eat or whatnot? But we emailed the county when we were starting the process, like they told me in their email that said, hey, look, when you go to start the hydrant, let us know. And I did that process. We installed it, and thing works great. So that's basically what there is about the hydrant.
And then specifically with that project, the timelines overlap from when you were a private citizen. Did it start then, and then you later became a supervisor when it finished?
Yeah, so it originally started long before I was a supervisor. We just got around to actually installing it once I was a supervisor. As I said, if we would have installed that at the beginning of like when they gave me permission, that was long before I was a supervisor. It never even would have came up. But this just became a political thing is all this became about. As I said, they got the DA to do some investigation. I don't know how they did an investigation with never even having a single conversation with me about it. Not a single thing was I asked about it. And nor have I ever seen this report that supposedly got written. I've asked for it, and they refuse to give it to me. So,
another area that the report was critical of you was in regards to cuts within the Community Development Department and how those were handled. So what was your take on that?
Yeah, so they used the term in there that I kept saying I was going to decimate the building department. Because when I ran, I did say there was problems there. There was a lot of problems within the Community Development Department and how projects were handled. And so they try to tie this to budget cuts. And so their whole report talks about the budget cuts in CDD. But what we did was we made a 15% cut across the county to all non-general fund departments, not just CDD. And so they talk about how all the employees were scared for their jobs. Well, wait a minute. How is that any different than any other county department as we were making reductions? And so you really have to look in the devil the details. When Quincy took over from CD director, they had approximately, I think it was 24 staff. In the 5 years, they grew by 34% to 32 staff. By the time we got done with our budget cuts, they still had 27 staff. That's more than they had 5 years earlier. And out of all the reductions, they didn't even cut 15%. They cut a 12.4%. But yet the grand jury spends a page or two advocating for pay raises for staff. I don't know if that's within their purview, but they seem to do that. And so they want to make it seem like somehow that the whole goal was to devastate that department, but they didn't even make the full cuts that we need them to make. Like other departments actually hit their 15%. CDD hit 12.4% to be exact of their budget cuts. And again, in 5 years, they grew by 34% more staffing. But no more permits. The workload didn't increase. Nothing changed except for more staffing. And so, but that's not what they want you to believe in this narrative, what happened. And, you know, when we do these things, by us making these choices and making these cuts, we created a $7 million surplus last year in our budget. Four of the five supervisors voted for that budget last year, and that's what turned out to be is we saved the taxpayers $7 million. And things are still getting done. Nobody even notices the difference, except for the taxpayers.
Need to take one more break. We're going through some of the recent Tuolumne County Grand Jury reports on this weekend's Motherlode Views. Mike Holland, District 1 Supervisor, is our guest on this weekend's show. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Our final segment with Supervisor Mike Holland is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to this final segment of Motherlode Views. I'm PGA Hansen, your host, talking with District 1 Tuolumne County Supervisor Mike Holland. He was the focus of a lot of aspects of the final two Tuolumne County grand jury reports. He's come on today to tell his side of the story on some of the findings and recommendations. Supervisor Holland, one of the other things that came up was questions about the examining the compatibility of holding two public offices simultaneously, you being a county supervisor and a member of the Sonora High School District Board of Trustees. Do you feel that that was done, everything within your legal rights?
Yeah, I do believe so. This came up in my conversation with the grand jury. It said I spent over 8 hours with them. And when I was there, their actual answer to me was, yeah, we looked in this and we don't think that it applies. The school sits within the city limits. They don't really have any cross connection. So far over the last year and a half, the only time it's been a problem is when the county donated some used fireman hoses and uniforms to the high school for their program over there, and I just had to recuse myself from that vote for that donation. And so, and if something was to come up, I would just recuse myself from that, which happens all the time. There's a lot of reasons why. If we have, you know, property near another property or something like that, we have to recuse ourselves. And so we've had people in the county that said they have written letters to the attorney general and gotten zero response. So I don't know. I mean, they're the ones that have to make that decision, and they have not said that it's not compatible.
And your term expires in a few months?
And I will not be rerunning, so that seat will be open for somebody. And hopefully, you know, the school board, we do great work over there. The school's in great shape. I'm super proud of my work over there, you know, and the board I have, and our superintendent's awesome, you know, and just so I'm super proud with my time there.
As mentioned earlier, those two reports, those final two, are over 100 pages in length. There's a lot of things that we could get into on this weekend show. You can find the links to those up on mymotherlode.com if you want to read those yourself and make your own opinions. But Supervisor Holland, are there more things in those reports that you feel that need more context or things you'd like to address today?
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, BJ, we could sit here and probably talk for 2 hours and not even cover all this. There's a lot of contradictory things in here when you actually read it, when they say from one section to another section. You know, they talk about how there's no more experts left at the county and that the county could be open for possible fines for something going wrong. But yet in the report, they made a point back in like 2018 or something, the county received almost a $200,000 fine for doing something wrong. And all these so-called experts were actually in place. So, and you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. We have the experts in place, we get a fine. We don't have experts in place, and we haven't got a fine. So, you know, and what they claim is an expert. As I said, they don't actually define what an expert is. And I think, you know, Roger has been filling in. We will have a new CDD director starting here, I believe, in about a month or so from now. That announcement will be coming probably the end of this month at our next board meeting. So I'm super excited about that. I think it's going to be great. You know, so some other stuff they talk about in there, they were really mad about the presentation I gave about Amador County. And if you go back and you watch that presentation, I never once call out a single staff member, never use their name. What I talked about was I had a friend that's a contractor here in town that ended up building some projects over in Amador. And they were amazed at how that system went, how quickly it went, and how easy and friendly it was. So it made me pick up the phone, call over there. I didn't know anybody there, and just said, this is who I am. Could I come over and have a conversation with you and see what you guys are doing? Because our system, in fact, when you read in the grand jury's report, they talk about finding 6, 7, 8, 9 that they went out and interviewed all these contractors and developers all throughout the county, and they all said the same thing. Our development process through our county is horrible, that our people down there, they make up rules that are not actual real rules. They just call them Tuolumne County rules, depending on who's doing the inspection, or not the inspection, but through the plan check, you would get one that would pass and one that wouldn't pass. Where they should all be under the same set of California rules. You know, they also talk about we should hire an independent third-party investigator to look at specifically my projects. Well, the county did. They hired Amador County. I don't know how – where else you're going to find a more qualified third party than another county agency that literally this is what they do for a living, just like our county. But that doesn't fit the grand jury's narrative. I mean, their narrative was like, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. And that's what most of this report was about, which is unfortunate because they really missed how this all got to. The reason I did – you know, when I did run on changes need to happen. And that Amador presentation really talks about that. In fact, I spent a lot of time talking to them, and they didn't even use the accurate information in the report. And so when I gave that presentation on Amador, what I was saying was Amador County in 1 year, say, did around 1,650 permits, and Tuolumne County did around 2,300. So it's about two-thirds. But they were doing it on a fraction of the staff that we were using. And that was the point I was making, and they get their – permits issued within days versus 6 to 8 months like it does over here. So what I was talking about was like, could we not take another government's approach, another county, which is under the same set of rules in California that we are, and adopt them here to make the process quicker and fairer? You know, there's no secret. I absolutely ran on this. I also ran on fixing the roads. And so as we get the roads fixed, let's see if we get a grand jury report saying we shouldn't fix the roads because I ran on it. You know, it's just kind of crazy. But so I wanted to adopt this because as we get more things built, it creates more tax dollars, which funds the budget, which funds everything people want to get done. And so it's the most reliable form of income is property taxes. And so that's really the key for long-term growth. And all these changes we're making, and they are getting made, it's just going to take 10 or 15 years for the fruit to come off of that tree, in which I hope one day somebody will look back at this and say, hey, they made some good choices back then, and now we're seeing it. So that was the goal behind that. I mean, as I said, BJ, I could sit and talk about this probably for hours with you about stuff that's all listed in here. They just try to take the most negative approach of everything that went on. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was in here. They asked me about why my relationship was so bad with CDD, and I pointed them to examples over the years of all the things that gone on. There was a time I was on a phone call back when Zoom first started in 2020 with the tribe, with Chicken Ranch, and with Quincy. It was about my project on High School Road. Well, the county's the one that set up the Zoom call, but back then it was just when you had voices, you didn't have pictures. And so she didn't realize I was on the phone. She spent the whole time bad-mouthing me to the tribe. Well, she didn't realize that. Well, about a week later, I talked to Lloyd back when he was tribal chair. He called Quincy and said, did you know Mike was on the phone call? She had to call and apologize to me because she completely lied. And so I actually met with the tribe on my own. It all got settled. Quincy had to call and apologize about being super unprofessional and all this. This was just a common thing down there. And this is what people need to remember. This was not a one-off. This was how things totally just happened down there. You know, same thing about they mysteriously lost a $58,000 check I wrote them. In fact, the grand jury quizzed me about that. And because they had an employee down there that went there and told the grand jury I didn't pay my fees, but she actually emailed me the receipt and I brought them a copy of the canceled check. How do you lose a $58,000 check and mysteriously just disappeared out of the system that said like I never paid it? And so none of that shows up in the report of all that's really going on. So
as you mentioned, it's a report we could talk for hours on this topic, but we've run out of time today. Mike Holland, appreciate you coming in and thanks for coming on Mother Lode.
Thank you, BJ.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.